Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime is so delicious, so unbelievable, no word exists to describe it. It's better than mind-blowing, it's mouth-blowing. Bright, citrusy, and spicy, this newest flavor from Captain Morgan is a balanced blend of sweetness with delicious notes of lime and slightly spicy chili flavor that is great for an escape outdoors with your crew or your next hangout. Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime is best enjoyed as an ice-cold shot or as a chili lime twist on a classic as a spicy daiquiri. Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime, a touch of sweet, a kick of heat. Please drink responsibly. Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime, premium Caribbean rum with natural flavors, 35% alcohol by volume, Captain Morgan Rum Co., New York, New York.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Lords of Limited. My name is Ben Warney, and joining me on the line, as always, Mr. Ethan Goblin Heel Cutter Sachs. If you can't beat him, join him, right, Ethan?
I don't know what's happening. I don't know. I'm not even sure you know what's happening. I don't know who you're mad at. I don't know why it's being directed at me. I don't know what the problem is, but we're going to get into it in this episode, Ben. We got a lot to talk about, I think.
Yeah, we got red to talk about, baby.
We got red to talk about. Well, you can wait. I know you're seeing red a little bit right now, but we'll wait a little bit to talk about red. So we've got some more Pioneer Masters for sure this week. We're going to be touching on a draft log and using that as a way to sort of sprinkle in some thoughts about non-Gates decks. You know, we were all hot and bothered about green decks last week, but we're going to sprinkle some other decks in with this discussion of this draft log.
Not just a draft log. This might be the world's best draft log I've ever seen in my life as far as options for a draft. This is the draft log of draft logs. This is the litmus test for Pioneer Masters. This is the perfect example of a draft.
I mean, it's sort of like if you were to have AI engineer a log to have the most possible paths and discussions, this would be the one.
This would be the one. It's yeah. A beautiful draft. You were like, you know, I think we could spend the whole episode talking about this draft in the show notes. And I was like, yeah, whatever. And I clicked it and I was like, oh.
So if you want to follow along at home with it, we'll have it a link to it in our show notes where you download the episode. Of course, if you're watching on YouTube, hello out there in YouTube land, and we'll have the visuals up for you. But it's going to be way less about like the picks that we make and way more about the discussions of the cards that are options and what those options mean. And then that'll give us the chance to talk about a variety of decks. And then, of course, tomorrow, so this episode will come out on Monday. Tomorrow is when we'll change over the bonus sheet from Planeswalker. So au revoir, Jace and Ajani and Garrick. Don't let the door hit you on the way out. And we've got Spells Week coming in, so a bunch of Fuse cards. And we'll talk about some big winners and losers from that changeover, important cards leaving, important cards coming in, all that good stuff.
Yeah, let's get into it.
All right, let's chat about the Patreon page real quick, and then we'll get into the episode. Patreon.com/Lords of Limited is where folks can go to give back to the show if they so choose. We've got a lot of great perks over at the Patreon page. We've got the Discord. It's qualifier weekend. There's a Foundation Sealed tournament. Qualifier weekend had some folks in the Discord sharing their sealed pools. I even saw some folks doing like big prep for the tournament, which was cool to see, getting on voice calls, sharing sealed pools and builds and talking about it. I was part of that qualifier weekend, no spoilers. My run will be up on our YouTube channel this week, but it was cool to participate in that and get to see that. So when there's high level events like Arena Opens and qualifier weekends, the Discord is an awesome place to be, and also just an awesome place to be for chatting about whatever magic stuff is going on in your life.
Yeah, for sure. I saw Sam P made day two. I don't know if anybody else did or not, but I saw that in there when I was scrolling through.
And Bistro Math, I think some other folks as well. But yeah, that was super awesome. So we're recording right now. I've been checking the channel to see like, what are people's pools? Like, how are people doing? Because I want to cheer them on too, you know? And some great perks as you move up the reward tier rankings. The best, of course, is access to our Patreon feed. The podcast is available over on the Patreon feed, so you get early access, and more importantly, you get access to our weekly bonus episode, Lords Unlimited, which is an awesome place for us to get to just dive a little deeper, continue the conversation from the podcast that week. So a lot of exciting stuff, and you can do a little free week trial over there if you want to check that out, see what that means. Like, oh, how does a podcast feed integrate into my podcast app? You can do all that for free. You don't even have to spend any money first to check it out, see the episode, see if it's what you want to do to give back to the show and get some perks. And we want to shout out our new patrons the first week that they join. This week, we're welcoming Joshua, Matthew, Tim, and David. Thank you, thank you, thank you. We really appreciate your support.
Yeah, cannot say thank you enough.
All right, let's get into this draft log, Ben. I'm really excited to chat with you about it. And I remember when I opened this pack one, pick one, I was like, I think all the options are on the bottom row. Like, you know, you got the three rows of cards on Arena. And I was like, I'm seeing all these cards on the bottom drawing my eyes. So I'll throw those out there and then I'll see if there's any other cards in the pack you want to shout out. I guess maybe one other that's catching my eye right now. So those cards being Simic Guildgate, blue-green tapland, Selesnya Charm, the green-white common that has three excellent modes, +2/+2 and trample, exile a creature power 5 or greater, or make a 2/2 knight token with vigilance. Gnarlback Rhino, 4 mana, 4/4 trample, heroic draw card. District Guide, 2 and a green, 2/2, when it enters, search a library for a land or a gate. Wild Slash, single red, deal 2 to any target. If you have Ferocious, damage can't be prevented this turn. And I guess the one other card that I'd shout out is Anchor to the Aether, 2 and a blue sorcery, put target creature on top of its owner's library and you scry one. A rare is a bit of a dud, Shamanic Revelation, 3 green, green. For a sorcery, draw a card for each creature you control. With Ferocious, you gain 4 for each creature you control with power 4 or greater.
Can we start the snark early? You haven't shouted out format all-star Falaji Archaeologist. 1 and a blue for the 0/3. Mill 3 cards, and if you whiff, it gets a +1/+1 counter.
Okay, so would you like to... Here's my question for you. Are you...
I'm so passive-aggressive right now.
This is what I'm saying. Like, you're passive-aggressive, and I haven't done anything to you. I haven't hurt you in any way. I would like to talk about Falaji Archaeologist. Would you like to talk about it now?
Sure, we can talk about it now. I think so.
Okay, so I wanted to endeavor to play Dimir this week. I just like couldn't find a draft to get into it responsibly. I did one where I like basically forced my way into it and got a bad deck, as often will happen in a format like this when you're forcing an archetype. But I was watching some of the Kenji stream, Numat the Nummy. He was like basically forcing Dimir one day and he kept saying, he had this bit where he was like, every Falaji Archaeologist he drafted, he was like, well, that's 2 wins right there. So he had like three Archaeologists. So you would have loved it. He was really just giving you the old reversey. But I've seen it in action on the other side of the battlefield. I've seen discourse in our Discord. Speaking of Samp, I did ask him about it because I know he's a champion of Dimir. I was like, I want to talk about Dimir. Here are my thoughts on it from seeing it and trying to piece together things. The other thing I'll say, I will use the D word. Falaji Archaeologist is doing quite well in the data. It has a high game in hand win rate among blue commons. It's the top performing blue common and one of the top commons overall. Not that high common game in hand win rate necessarily matters, but like that is a point of reference of like, if it has a high game in hand win rate and we're low on it, I often feel like we probably need to shift that a little bit. So this is all sort of theory crafting in a sense, my feeling about Dimir, and that's what I wanted to talk about Falaji Archaeologist in, is I think we were slightly wrong about the card. And one of the things I have, this is also in conjunction with Golgari. One of the things I want to walk back is our thoughts about MDFCs not mattering or stinking or whatever. And I think in Golgari specifically and Dimir with Falaji Archaeologists, the MDFC is giving you access to modal things that you can get back as lands. Like when you're commune with the gods, which usually can only find a creature or an enchantment, has the option to find an MDFC that can be a land drop for you to hit. When your Falaji Archaeologist can find a Jawari Disruption or a Salundi Vision, that's a land drop for you to hit. I think that bumps that card's flexibility up, and I'm more interested in it because that's one of the things I often want from that card is like, I'd like to be able to just hit land drops with my deck. And when Falaji Archaeologist whiffs or finds me an Essence Scatter, I'm like, that's not actually what I wanted. What I wanted was just to be able to keep hitting land drops in my Dimir deck. So I have found that to be where the MDFCs have shined for me. And in Golgari specifically, with milling them with Undead Butler or Commune or whatever. And in Dimir with Falaji Archaeologist, which is, again, theory crafting. But I think the card is better than we were giving it credit for.
I would buy the better than giving it credit for, but I just, here's my 2 cents on Falaji Archaeologist. I feel good when my opponents play it, mm-hmm. and I feel terrible when I have cast it, and I cast it a lot early on in the format. Now, granted, I'm playing Gates decks where it's probably at its worst against a Gates deck, but if it whiffs and you're playing against a control deck, you just mulliganed. You're mm-hmm. down a card. And like, it's hard to stuff your deck with 10 plus spells. I buy the MDFC thing. Like, that all checks out to me. I haven't done that yet. That sounds great. Love that. But it's still hard to get your spell count up to like 10, 11, 12 spells. And if you get it higher than that, you're bordering on one of those true control decks, and I just don't think it's possible to account for all of the different matchups you're going to face once you start steering towards a true control deck. And yes, Falaji, every time everybody talks about it, they talk about, well, you perfectly hit the 0-3 and get your spell when you need your spell, or you hit the 1-4 against Boros, and it's great, and they don't have a trick to just mow it down and keep smashing you. There's a lot of inherent variance in Falaji Archaeologist for which mode you get. I mean, granted, you can choose not to put a spell if you want the 1-4, for sure, against Boros. But ultimately, I think it's got a lot of... I think it what it wants you to do forces you to build bad decks in the format. Like, I don't want to be playing a blue control deck. That's my two cents. And if you get forced into it, you probably got to play some Falaji Archaeologist, but I just don't understand the narrative of it being an important piece of the format.
But so what do you say to it? I know I hate to use it because I really want to move away from us talking about 17 lands data because I don't think that plays to either of our strengths. But like, what do you say to it being like, whatever, it's a top 10 common, top blue common? Like, do you just say like, that's just wrong?
Yeah, I don't have much of a response to that because it's also in best of one. And like, I've gotten absolutely crushed in best of one when I'm trying to play multicolor nonsense too. But I think like this format is prone to hyper aggro decks, and we know the hand smoother and best of one juices those archetypes up.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, like you're going to face them more often. And yeah, Falaji Archaeologist, like if I know I'm likely to face Boros 5 times out of 7 runs in Mythic or whatever.
Yeah, but that isn't the case. Like I've played both. I've played more best of one than best of three, but I've switched to best of three over the past few days. But like I was facing, I would say 60% Gates decks. I was not facing aggro that much in best of one.
But my point is, I don't want Archaeologist against Gaze decks. That's what I don't get. Like, it's hard for me to think that a card is good that I don't want against the premier deck in the format.
Mm-hmm. The other thing that I feel like I shifted my mentality about with Dimir, which is, again, it's hard for me to think about how Archaeologist fits in there other than just as an early play. But I was thinking about Dimir more like Rakdos as like a mid-range deck. And stopping thinking about it as a control deck and just like a deck that gets, sure, it can grind, air quotes, in the sense of it has a ton of 2-for-1s, like thanks to Possessed Scob, etc. But that like you want to be getting on board and pressuring your opponent. And then if you have to, you can, you know, play the value game in the mid stages and late stages of the game. How Falaji Archaeologist fits into that, I am not particularly sure. A card that I had kind of want to walk back my tune a little bit about is Basilica Screecher in that sense. That I've been impressed by that in like assertive Dimir decks that are like super low curve, like your curve stops at 3 or whatever. And the Screechers kind of pose a bit of a problem. Now, obviously, Kral Harpooner laughs at them, whatever. Your Gates Ablaze laughs at those. But I have found Basilica Screecher to be a little bit better than I was giving it credit for last week.
So This ties into a lot of my points, I think, about red when we get to talking about red.
Yeah.
So all of those cards, Falaji Archaeologist, Cloudfin Raptor, Basilica Screecher, none of those are particularly intrinsically powerful cards. Like, I think it is possible. Like, usually Master sets are synergy-driven sets, like synergy-dominant sets, synergy-first. And I don't think this one is. Like, I think the raw card quality, certainly this week while the Planeswalkers are running around, these 2 weeks, the raw card quality vastly outtrumps synergy for the most part. And so when you're choosing to draft synergy over good cards, I just feel like you're giving up so much equity. You're doing like a tier 1.5 or a tier 2 strategy in the format where you can just draft great cards and win with great cards.
But you can't always do that. And I have, because I've floundered a lot this week with Gates decks, with control decks. Like, I think that it's harder to do than I think you're making it out to be, or at least my experience has been that you can't always just draft the good cards. You can start with a good card and then you maybe get pushed off of it, or something else is like so apparently open, like one of the good streamlined 2-color decks is open, that you're supposed to be doing that instead. So I agree with you that like the power level is there, but it's not like you're, I feel like what I'm hearing you say undercuts the power of the streamlined 2-color decks that we like.
That's fair. Yeah, I'm not acknowledging that. I don't want them to, I don't want to sound like they're not good decks. Like, if you hand me a good mono red deck, yes, signing up to play it. If you hand me, I don't know about this blue black deck you're talking about, like with Cloudfin creatures and Cloudfin Raptors and Basilica creatures, but you hand me a streamlined, low curve, synergistic archetype, I will happily pilot it. But I feel like in the drafting portion, like and maybe this is a me thing, I just don't understand how you're ever supposed to get into them if you rate things on card quality. Like, if you expect me to pick a 1-1 haste heroic, make another 1-1 haste over a card like Dinrova Horror or something, I don't have it in my DNA. I cannot. it is
like. But I thought you were. But this is an interesting change to your tune from last week, where you were like, Dinrova Horror is replaceable.
Sort of. Yes. Yes and no. But that was. So the Gates decks aren't quite as open this week anymore. Like, I'm with you on that. Like, I haven't been able to draft Gates as often as I would like, but it boils down to, I think for me, what you value as the best color. And I still value green as the best color. Like, and I think common wisdom at this point, or 17 lands, would say that red's the best color, right? Like, red, white, red, black, top two performing archetypes. I haven't been on there, but I was listening to LR and I was listening to Cheon and Marshall talk about all the data and what it says and all that sort of stuff. But I don't subscribe to red being the best. So because I don't think red base is a very good base for the Gates deck. And I want to give myself a chance every draft to get into what I think the best deck in the format is. And so I still value green as the best color. And I think green in the drafts also has great off ramps. Like, once you start down the mono red path, you're just like, fingers crossed, I hope nobody else is doing this and I get all the good red aggro cards. I don't think it's particularly forcible. Whereas if I start drafting Gates and Gates gets cut, like, I can snap up some Gnarlback Rhinos and I can play green red. I can play green white if Selesnya is open. Like, you give yourself a chance to get Gates decks and good ways to pivot out of it. Whereas I think if you start down some of these other streamlined decks, it's like trying to shoot the moon in hearts. If you get there, your deck is great. And if you don't, you're just going to get mowed over by almost everything. Whereas with my draft strategy, I feel like I almost always end up with a good to very good deck.
Yeah, my experience is different. And so I want to push back on a couple things. One is that I have done the thing where I'm like, oh, I'm just going to get the good cards and I'll take the setup for those good cards. And then the good cards don't come. So I think the reverse is true. And like, maybe I missed an off ramp in those drafts and I should have picked up on something. I don't know. But the thing about fingers crossed with red doesn't really ring true to me, because I think unless there's like multiple other, and like we're talking like two or three other red aggro drafters at the table, I don't think you can get cut out. Like, you have a point in the show notes about like, it's risky because like you have to get like all the right pieces, but all the cards are the right pieces. Like, there's a sort of heroic-y thing that a Crow and Crusader makes you want to do a little bit more than the rest of red. And so there's that as a piece of it. But then beyond that, like Goblin Heel Cutter, Gearper, Gearcrafter, Rimrock Knight, those are all just like good aggressive cards. And I know they like your amazing Gates decks laugh in the face of those cards.
I'm not saying I'm Gates all the time and Gates Ablaze. I don't want to talk like I have a Gates deck and Gates Ablaze every draft. That's not true. But if we're putting things on quadrant theory, like that's my approach to this format. Like, I'm treating it much more like I want to pick the best card out of every pack.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, I just can't take a Rimrock Knight. I can't do it. Like, Rimrock Knight is such a poor individual card compared to the average power level of individual cards in this format that it's so hard for me to get into that deck. Like, when do you take the Rimrock Knight and over what?
I took it pick 8 in this draft log.
Sure, but you just at some point, we'll get into the draft in a second, folks. Okay. We will get there, but I think this is a good healing conversation for Ethan and I.
I'm glad you feel healed. I feel extremely triggered.
Oh, do you? I'm sorry. But so, for example, like if you look at Green's Commons, I'm taking District Guide over Rimrock Knight. I'm taking Gnarlback Rhino. I'm taking Voyaging Satyr. Like, there's a list of 5 or 6 Green Commons I'm taking ahead of Rimrock Knight, or ahead of Goblin Heel Cutter is great. But again, like, is that the thing? Like, what's the red card that hooks you into red? That's the thing I don't get.
Heel Cutter, I think, certainly at common, and this is sort of a teaser for what we'll talk about at the end of the episode with spells, the spells Fortnite coming. Many people have told us we should start calling it Fortnite because it's 2 weeks and we don't get to use that word enough. So we're going to start doing that. So Planeswalker Fortnite is ending and spells Fortnite is coming and Goblin Heel Cutter will be gone.
So everyone can stop talking about mono red.
Well, I do think that'll be a big knock to mono red. I think the, I mean, and you're saying mono red, you don't mean literal mono red. You just mean red based aggressive decks.
Yeah, like yeah. Red or red white. I mean, and red white certainly is still going to exist. But the thing about, here's the other thing about my draft strategy. Mm-hmm. I also still get to play Goblin Heel Cutters in my green red beatdown decks. When mm-hmm. I get cut out of gates and red is open, like happy to do that. I just end up with a base green version of the deck. And I think the narrative that I'm pushing back against, which is, if you feel personally attacked, this is not pushing back at you.
Well, because you're talking to me.
I am talking to you. I was also very disappointed when I came into your stream and you were playing red because I wanted some solidarity from you, uh-huh. and then you couldn't give me any solidarity.
I couldn't do it.
But the narrative I want to push back against is that red's the best. I just don't think so. And I hate the feeling of arguing against not only people whose opinion I respect, but then those people just get to hold up the data and say, like, yes, that's the best. Like, and I feel like I'm an old man yelling at clouds saying, I don't know, there might be another option out here. And I'm pretty sure I'm right for me. There's also probably multiple ways to approach the format. Mm-hmm. But I think mine is one of the highest reward, least risk ways to approach it.
Yeah, I buy that. You know when you discover a new binge-worthy show or a song you play on repeat or an underrated common in a rotating bonus sheet and you have to share it with your friends so they can experience just how awesome it is?
That's kind of what it feels like when you discover that Mint Mobile offers premium wireless for $15 a month when you purchase a 3-month plan. It's such an awesome deal, there's no way you can keep it to yourself.
Friends don't let friends overpay for wireless. Say bye-bye to your overpriced wireless plan and switch to Mint Mobile.
$15 a month? That's less than an entry into the Arena Open. So cheap!
Use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and bring your phone number along with all your existing contacts.
All plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text delivered on the nation's largest 5G network.
To get this new customer offer and your new 3-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/LOL.
That's mintmobile.com/LOL. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/LOL. $45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first 3-month plan only. Speed slower above 40 gigabytes on the unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details.
Let's dial back into this pack one, pick one, because I think this will give you an opportunity to talk about that. So what cards jump out to you looking at this pack to refresh folks' memories of what's here?
Sure. Phalagi Archaeologist, not one of them. That's a bad way to start the episode.
It's all good.
But I think a good discussion. We needed to have that discussion at some point. Might as well get it out of the way. The five that you mentioned. Selesnya or Simic Guildgate, blue-green, Selesnya Charm, Gnarlback Rhino, District Guide, Wild Slash. I think those are the five cards. You can shout out Anchor to the Ether, but I don't think you're taking that here.
I agree.
I'm curious as to your thoughts, because I've gone back and forth between Simic Guildgate and District Guide. Are you still on the first District Guide over the first gate?
I don't know anymore. I'm a little gun-shy about the Gates deck currently, and that's why this pack sort of, like, makes me nervous a little bit. It's not something that I want to, like, I don't feel as like I want to go after it as much. And that's partially because I feel like I understand some of the other decks more. And I feel like the Gates deck is more contested. And looking at this pack, one of the reasons I didn't take one of those four green cards is that I didn't know what to take.
That's fair. Yeah.
District Guide, Gnarlback Rhino, Selesnya Charm, and a green gate are all very close in my pack one, pick one power rankings.
I agree. Yes, they're all very close.
And Wild Slash, which is what I did select, is not only a card that I think lets me get into red potentially, but is also a card I really want in my Gates decks because I get to go Gruul Guildgate on one, Guildgate on two, and Wild Slash your two drop, which is very important too. So yeah, I didn't know. So I guess, but that's a cop-out answer. What am I taking? If I have to take one of these four cards, I almost want to take Selesnya Charm. You've sort of talked me into it. Like, because if I'm thinking about ceilings of cards, Selesnya Charm is the highest ceiling. Like, if it makes it into my deck, that's the card I want the most because it's so flexible.
I agree, but you don't have to pick it quite that highly. And
you don't have to take any of these four cards this highly.
Gates, you do.
Sometimes.
If you want to send the message, sometimes. Sure. I think for me, I've tried the district guide over gate thing. I really don't want more than two district guides.
Yeah.
And if green's open, you end up, like, it's not that hard to get district guides if green is open. So I think I would start with Simic Guildgate here.
And then just hope one of those three green cards is going to wheel.
Sure, that one of them is going to wheel. But also, I'm not into, like, taking seven gates in a row anymore. Like, I'm much quicker to get off the gates deck.
That's good to know. Yeah, that's how I feel too. Or maybe that's been my issue. Like, I feel like I've had drafts where, like, I go, like, Gatebreaker Ram one, or the what's it called? The 4/3 trample rare that makes your other four power things two mana cheaper. I forget what it's called, but, like, start with that and then go, like, green gate, green gate, green gate. And I'm like, okay, I guess this is what I'm doing. And then just, like, my deck doesn't work at the end of the draft.
Talking about Goreclaw, Terror, that's not a gates card, though. So, but the other thing I want to say about, like, being quicker to jump off the gates deck is if you still start with a couple gates, like, let's say I take Simic Guildgate, then I take, like, Magical Christmas Land, take a Gruul Guildgate. And then I'm not seeing great cards, there's some gates missing. I'm off it. But then pack two, I just randomly open Gates Ablaze. Mm-hmm. I've already got two gates and I can take it and get back in. Or I open, like, Gates Ablaze and get packed. Like, there's times I've started, been like, no thanks, been off it. But the fact that you took two or three gates early lets you get an on-ramp to get back in once you do randomly open them or get past them.
But so I guess I'm just not, like, I mean, maybe it's being gun shy or whatever. Maybe it's building decks incorrectly. I'm not interested in you've got outs to a blue-white aggro deck. Like, you picked up a late, one of your off-ramps was Liev Sky Knight and something else. And yeah, you've got some gates that are appealing, and then you see the Gates Ablaze. I don't want to take Gates Ablaze in that spot. I would rather just keep drafting the blue-white deck that seemed like it was open, and give up on the raw card quality, air quotes, of Gates Ablaze plus Gates plus play good stuff. Because I feel like it's more reliable that I'm going to get a good blue-white deck than this pack two pick one Gates Ablaze is any indicator that something good is going to happen in this draft for me.
Okay, so in this hypothetical scenario, are you deep into green?
Yeah, I guess let's replace Liev Sky Knight with, I don't know, a late Selesnya Charm, and I've got Gnarlback Rhino. Like, and I'm pushing into, but more green-white aggressive, green-white beats, mid-range, whatever, than I am Gates. There's a little bit of tension there for me about taking Gates Ablaze, because, like, those aren't necessarily going down the same path, and you're going to have to start to make different decisions, whereas if there's just a card that slots into that streamline two color deck, I'm more interested in that, I think.
That's fair, but I've also done what you're talking about, like, played green white with eight gates because I had two Gatebreaker Rams, like, and it was a Selesnya beatdown deck with two, but I was able to play the Gatebreaker Rams because I had four gates, and then saw them, took them, and then picked up. Now, granted, I was lucky that all my gates touched green and white and all that other sort of stuff, but I think I'm cooler on, I'm not into, to sum this up, to wrap this up for the folks, I'm not into taking seven gates in a row and fingers crossed anymore.
Yeah.
But I am into two or three early to leave myself the option later in the draft.
Okay.
So that's to answer what I would take out of these first five cards. I think it is Simic Guildgate for that reason. But I respect the Wild Slash pick also. That's good reasoning there too.
Yeah. So I took Wild Slash, and we'll continue on with that in the pile. Moving on to pack one, pick two. There's a Boros Guildgate. There's a Dreadbore, black red destroyer creature, planeswalker. Don't think there's any other commons to shout out. Moving on to the uncommons, there's a Night Howler, one black for the 0/0 with Bestow for two black, an enchanted creature, or this creature get +X/+X, where X is the number of creature cards in all graveyards. There's Silkwrap, the one and a white exile thing with mana value 3 or less until it leaves. And then a rare still in the pack, Sylvan Primordial, 5GG for a 6/8 with reach. When it enters, for each opponent, you blow up a non-creature permanent, and then for each permanent destroyed that way, you search your library for a forest card, comes into play tapped.
So for me, I see that the card that you selected is Night Howler. I don't think that would be in consideration for me. Was that pushing down, like wanting to get into black green or trying to experiment with another archetype? Or do you like that as the pick still?
I think this is the best card in the pack. If we're talking about power level of cards, I think this is the most powerful card in the pack. I think Night Howler is very good.
For black green exclusively, correct?
And black red.
And black red. Interesting.
Yeah.
So you would, like, your black red at the end of the draft, you would prefer to have Night Howler over Dreadbore.
Yeah. I mean, Night Howler is just, I mean, I have faced it enough. I think this may be the first time I've actually took it in a draft. I've faced it enough and found it to be really annoying. The fact that it goes make an innocuous thing big and then die into a big thing has been problematic for me.
Okay. I think I would be on Dreadbore or Silkwrap here after taking Wild Slash. And I think I would probably be on Dreadbore just to try to get into a great deck.
Yeah. I mean, this might have been partially me thinking like, well, maybe Undead Butler wheels and like maybe I can get into black green specifically. So it gives me outs to that. I just think it's more powerful than Dreadbore. Like,
its ceiling is higher. I agree.
Yeah.
But I just don't think you hit that ceiling very often if you're not black green.
I think you really can. Like if you're thinking about it early, I think you really can. Like, okay. How high is your creature count in black red decks? Is it not 15?
I haven't played black red since the beginning of the format.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I think your creature count is there in black red. And neither of us are interested in Sylvan Primordial. That card is not good.
No, not good.
Okay. So I took the Night Howler here. Pack one, pick three. There's still a Golgari Guildgate in the pack. Black green tap land. Looking at the uncommons, there's a lot. There's a Thunderclap Wyvern, 2W for a 2/3 flash flyer. Other creatures you control with flying get +1/+1. I feel like I don't respect this card enough. I'm not saying I would take it here, but I feel like I need to start like shouting it out. It's always a card that I see like pick 12 and I'm like, dang it. How did I miss not getting into blue white in this seat? You know,
I think it's like the same as Liev Sky Knight for me in the blue white deck, maybe even a little worse. Liev Sky Knight's so good.
Leaf Sky Knight is really good. There's a Seed Guardian, 2GG for the 3/4 reach, dies into an XX where X is the number of creature cards in your graveyard. There's Balaged Recovery, the MDFC that rebuys a card from your graveyard to your hand. There's a Thopter Engineer, 2 and a red 1/3. When it enters, you make a Thopter, and artifact creatures you control have haste. Priest of the Blood Rite, 3 black for a 2/2, comes in with a 5/5 flyer, and at the beginning of your upkeep, you lose 2 life.
Yeah, this is interesting. I know we said we weren't gonna rewind much, but I just want to shout out more about gate stuff. So let's say I go Simic Guildgate into probably, I don't even care what pick two is. It doesn't have much for the gates. Maybe Dreadbore, maybe Leaf Crown Dryad. I would not take Golgari Guildgate here anymore, pick three. I think the green-black gates I don't care about because I very frequently care about black cards in them. Like I'm much more interested in Gruul first, I think Selesnya second. Like I really like the Naya Life Simic, and then I basically value Golgari Guildgate like an off green
because you want access to Gates Ablaze and you want access to Selesnya Charm.
Yeah, I want access to Selesnya Charm. I really like the Selesnya cards. Like I like green red base and green white base, and I also like those as off ramps for the Gates decks. And I would very rarely want to off ramp into Jund or things like that.
Makes a ton of sense.
So for you here with Wild Slash and Night Howler, I think there's a fairly clear pick in Thopter Engineer just to go along with your Wild Slash, gets you deeper into red, that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I took as well. I was eyeing, I think probably just because we talk about, maybe we should talk about Golgari now. As I said, we're going to pepper in the conversations about the archetypes here. I was eyeing the Seed Guardian, one, because it's just a card I like, and two, because I was sort of jonesing to draft this Golgari deck. So I got a tweet from someone named Justin saying, I just listened to the pod and heard you say not sure how to get into black green, and this is my last deck. It got me a trophy. And they talked about a card that had not been on my radar, but Commune with the Gods, about clocking those in draft and wheeling them. And I definitely had noticed that they go late all the time because I was like, this card's terrible. This is the one in a green. Look at the top five. You can put a creature or enchantment from among them into your hand and the rest go into your graveyard. Well, that in conjunction with Gurmag Angler basically gives you like a 3-mana 5/5, right? Because on turn three, you can just do that. If you've got an Evolving Wilds or some other thing that entered the graveyard, that's all you need to then fuel the Gurmag Angler. And I hadn't quite put that piece of the puzzle together. And that's a pretty big game. Not saying that that is a tier one thing to do, but I think as an off ramp, as a tier 1.5, tier 2 deck, think it makes a ton of sense. Like being able to scoop up undesirable cards, having a redundancy of communes to either fuel your Gurmag anglers, make your Nemesis of Mortals cheaper, whatever, have some redundancy there. So I think I was sort of thinking about that while eyeing the Seed Guardian, but I agree. Taking Thopter Engineer as a follow-up to Wild Slash makes the most sense.
And I think the issue with that black-green deck is I've seen that too, and I've played against it, and sometimes it gets you good, like if you don't have the removal spell, but there's so many ways for it to go wrong too. Like it's not... Like you said, it's definitely a tier two strategy because like if your opponent has Dreadbore, like you did all this work to power out Gurmag Angler and they snap it off, or you did all this work to power out Gurmag Angler and they Gust of Winds it and it's back in your hand, then you're like, oh, like, I mean, Gust of Winds just laughs at that.
I did finally get a version of this and like barely got the 2-1 with it, which is not a great sell for the deck. But part of it was like one of my opponents had Secure the Wastes and I was like, oh, my big dumb 5/5s cannot beat 6 chump blockers.
No.
Like, that's not how my deck is winning, you know? So it's tough.
But I do think once you get out the Chonky Donkers, decks like that really want Rogue's Passage. Rogue's Passage is a card that I love in this format.
It's a really good shout. I like that. Okay, so an easy Thopter Engineer for me, what would you take here? If we can keep doing this sort of divergent path, let's say you go Simic Gate.
Let's do it at the end so people don't have to keep track of it. I think that'll be easier. So we've got Wild Slash, we've got Night Howler, we've got Thopter Engineer. Talk to me about this next pack.
Pack 1, pick 4. Boros Guildgate. Possessed Scob. 3BB, 3/2. Rebuys a creature, instant, or sorcery from your yard when it enters, and then when it dies, exile it instead. There's Witch's Mark. 1 and a red. Sorcery. You can discard a card if you do draw 2, and you make a Wicked Roll token attached to a creature you control. In the uncommons, there's a second Thunderclap Wyvern. There's a Conclave Naturalists, 4 and a green, 4/4. When it enters, you can destroy an artifact or enchantment. And a Mogus's Warhound, 1 and a red, 2/2. Attacked each combat, a fable. Has a bestow cost of 2 and a red to make a creature +2/+2 and attack each combat, if able.
Yeah, this is kind of a flat pack here. There's nothing that really is good enough to push you in a new direction. Like, you can't take Thunderclap Wyvern after passing the previous Thunderclap Wyvern.
I mean, you could.
And try to wheel it.
I try to wheel it. You could.
That seems a little aggressive to me.
I don't think it's worth abandoning the start I have, but I think that's like in with other starts, if we were a bit more at sea, if we had 3 disparate picks and one of them touched white or blue, I think you could do it.
Sure. I think I like Mogus's Warhound here for you. I've been annoyed by that card. It's similar to the Night Howler problem, like making an innocuous thing big and then like it's the 2/2 still left around, like after you Gates Ablaze or something. Right. It's been a problem.
Yeah, I mean, slapping it on a Thopter token, that's nothing to sneeze at. I mean, the other card, I thought about Possessed Scob. I think partially because I was curious about Dimir and not, like, this feels a bit like I'm making a decision by taking Mogus's Warhound, I feel like. Now I have 3 red cards. One of them is extremely aggressive. Like, I feel like I'm making a decision with this pick.
I agree, and I think it's the right one. So, but to go, I would highly disagree with taking Possessed Scob this highly. I just don't think you need to, and I don't think it's good enough intrinsically as a card to take it this high. It's really slow, really slow. Like you have to have, for Possessed Scob to be good, you have to have the nuts around it. Mm-hmm. And so taking it highly, assuming you're going to get the nuts, is pretty dangerous, I think.
Yeah, I think that checks out.
But for me, like, this is what I'm saying about red. Like, I never do this because I'm never taking Wild Slash first. And of the red cards, like, Wild Slash is probably the one that I would get into red with. I just don't see it.
I mean, I guess you're saying
like,
you don't
here, see here it. Here I do because we took Wild Slash first. Like, once you take Wild Slash first, I can follow the train. Yeah. I just never take Wild Slash first.
Right. But you see, like, you don't think, like, I mean, my reasoning for Wild Slash is good in Gates, and I don't know which of these 4 cards to take, pack 1, pick 1. Like, that all checks out for you, right?
Yes. Everything checks out for me. I don't think it's crazy to take Wild Slash there. You could even convince me that it's right.
Yeah.
I just don't. I value the Simic Guildgate higher. Mm-hmm. Like, if that's Golgari Guildgate, but that's the problem. I like green so much. Mm-hmm. That I value District Guide, Gnarlback Rhino, probably not Voyaging Satyr, but there's a handful of green cards I value above Wild Slash because I want to get into green so much.
So I'll just quickly shout how the rest of these first eight picks went, and then maybe you can take us through an alternate, a potential alternate route.
Sure.
So pack one, pick five, there's no red card that I like to follow up, but I took Imposing Sovereign, one and a white, 2/1. Creatures your opponents control enter tapped.
That card is so annoying. I hate that card so much.
That card is so annoying. I agree.
And not good at attacking, but like you would just play an enchantment that was one and a white. Your opponent's creatures enter tapped.
Right. Well, but then it's just a random body that can wear auras or bestow stuff. Like it's just so good. And I, like I said, we just made the decision to be red, to be aggressive, and Imposing Sovereign is excellent in that department. Pick six, get a Goblin Heel Cutter, which I do think is far and away the best card in the pack. And that makes me feel really good about, like, it's so interesting because I feel like it's pick six. It's in a color that I'm deep in, and it's my best card right now. Like, it's my best card of the four red cards that I have, I think.
For sure.
Yeah.
But so, and just one more thing about One more thing about red. The other thing I don't like about drafting red, like, once we took Mogus's Warhound, basically, I feel like you're giving up a lot of your draft skill. Like, I don't think drafting the red aggro decks let you leverage agency in the draft that much.
But why do I need to leverage agency if it's open and being passed to me? If
it's open and it's good. Sure. Yeah. But what about when this pack doesn't have, like, what do you do when this pack doesn't have Goblin Heel Cutter?
It doesn't matter because the rest of the cards stink. Like, that's not a good argument. This pack, like, I take, what do you take? You take Izzet Guildgate. You take Pilgrim's Eye. You don't care about any of these cards. So who cares?
But the broader point for me is there's no off ramp. Like, what's the off ramp? If you're here at this point and you start getting cut,
I need to hear what your path is. Tell me what your first five picks are.
Okay.
And then I'll tell you, and then I get to make the same case for you.
Sure. Pack one, pick one. I would take Simic Guildgate.
Uh huh.
Pack one, pick two. I think I would take probably Dreadbore and be really unhappy about it.
Okay.
Actually, that's not true. I think I would take Silkwrap.
Okay.
So I would go Simic Guildgate, Silkwrap. Then I would take Seed Guardian. And then I would take Conclave Naturalists, pick four.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would take probably Boros Guildgate and again be very unhappy about it.
Mm-hmm.
And then here I would take Izzet Guildgate and be quite happy about it.
I think that is bad. I think not taking Goblin Heel Cutter with your spot is bad. Like, you have two, like, you can be Gruul.
I can, but neither Naturalist nor Seed Guardian is great in Gruul. If Seed Guardian were a Gnarlback Rhino, I would take Goblin Heel Cutter over Izzet Guildgate.
But you're doing the same thing. You have no off-ramp now either. What's your off-ramp? You have a pile of garbage. And you're hoping you're gonna open power, intrinsically powerful cards. And and God bless you, I hope you do. I don't need to do that. Cause I know I'm gonna open a Rimrock Knight, and that's what I want. And so, like, I don't need an off-ramp. The packs are full of garbage cards for me to take that I will happily put in my red deck. You don't get that luxury. You have to take garbage here. And then you have to hope that pack two, pick one delivers for you.
I just don't think so. I feel like my start has so many ways to go right. And yours has one way to go right, which is take red cards.
And it's already happening. It's going right. This is a good, like, taking Goblin Heel Cutter pick six here is just great.
I agree. It is a dream that Goblin Heel Cutter's here pick six.
Yeah, but I'm saying, like, replace it with Rimrock Knight. I don't feel as happy, but I'm still happy. Wild Slash, Warhound, Thopter Engineer, Rimrock Knight, I'm good.
It's the start to a deck.
Yes.
I guess that's the thing. Like, I view the, that's maybe that's why I feel so alone. I don't feel the format as that, like, where you're trying to piece together a deck from the very beginning. Like, I see it much more like Cube, where I'm like, you know, if you watch an LSB Cube video, he's got five lands and a Dark Ritual and a Black Lotus at the end of his first seven picks. Like, that's the spot I feel like I'm in here after the first seven picks. Like, I'm drafting it much more like Cube, and I don't want to draft Mono Red in Cube.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. I think we can put the draft log to bed for now. I did say, I was like, I think we could devote the entire episode to this, and we still could, but we've got some other things we want to touch on. I think this is really informative. So this draft, I did end up, I took a Dragon Mantle next, Rimrock Knight pick 8, had outs to be a second color, but then ended up just actually being full on mono red at the end of it. Just feeling like that was where I was going to be at my best, partially because I had triple Dragon Mantle, and I just think Dragon Mantle, if you have 16 red sources in your deck, is going to be the best. And the deck did well. 3-0, 6-0'd.
In
best of three. Can you believe it? No hand smoother necessary.
this is a fierce looking deck. I just...
Do you want
to... We should put it to bed. I was just going to talk about Monastery Swift Spear.
What's the problem with Monastery Swift Spear?
I think doing work to make Monastery Swift Spear the size of a normal Magic card is not particularly where I want to be in the format.
This is a good deck.
A great deck.
Why
yes.
are you mad?
Very good deck.
Why? What is up? Like, why can't you be like, cool, this is a... Like, what I am having a hard time with is that, like, you're not seeing this and going like, cool, I'd like to try and draft a deck like this. Because when people show me decks that I haven't drafted, like that black-green deck someone showed me, I was like, oh, okay. I want to figure out how to like get there. You don't have that when you look at this. You're like, this is ugly. I wish it didn't exist. Stop showing this to me. And that I don't understand as like a Magic player, but also as a podcaster. Like, what are we? Like I said to you this week, I was like, we can't get on the mic and be like, gates are great. Take two.
I agree, and I have drafted a lot of Gates decks this week. It's just been like green, red, and green, white because I ramp out of green. Uh-huh. I guess that is the overarching reason that this is so repulsive to me. It's not repulsive, to be clear. Like that's hyperbole, but you like when you sign up to do this, you're blocking out every other option in the draft. It's like drafting mono red and cube, which feels wrong to me. And that's not an option that people shouldn't love and do. But could you imagine? Here's how I feel about it. This is how I feel. I feel like replace Pioneer with Vintage Cube and Data. And Data says that what's some card that goes in mono red that's not a good Magic card? All I can think of is Ragavan, but that's just a great card.
Like, Goblin Guide.
Sure, but Goblin Guide's not even in the Vintage Cube anymore. But imagine the Data saying the Goblin Guide has like a 70% win rate, and everyone being like, "Well, Goblin Guide is great. It's got a 70% win rate. You should." Or that, like, a better example is Mono White.
Cut.
What? No. It's just like, hear me out. The Mono White has a great win rate in Vintage Cube, right? Like, I don't want to draft Mono White in Vintage Cube every time.
You don't have to draft it every time, but like, when you get a pick 6 Goblin Heel Cutter and you've got a weak start and you're already in like touching that color, like I'm just saying, like this is when you should draft red. This is a great seat to draft red in, and I think not taking Goblin Heel Cutter pick 6 regardless of your start is a mistake. That I feel pretty strongly about, and it doesn't matter because Goblin Heel Cutter will be gone tomorrow, but and I don't feel that strongly about any other red common. Like replace it with Rimrock Knight, like I said, then whatever, take yours at Guildgate, fine.
How much is it getting cut out of the episode? All of it?
Depends. Are there any other two-color decks that we feel like we'd like to touch on before getting to the spells list?
Yeah, I would really like to touch on Gruul. I think Gruul is excellent because it still gets all those red aggressive tools. You just happen to be green base a lot of the time, and you can be red base, but it's tough because Gnawback Rhino's green, and it's the best common reason I think to be Gruul beatdown.
You're never doing the Acroan Crusader thing in these Gruul off ramp decks, right?
Correct. No, it's much more like you play some McKindy Slide Runners, which I mean I'm not happy about, but I've played a lot of McKindy Slide Runners this week, which is the 1/2/1 trample that attacks as a 3/2 if you've got land drops coming.
Trample's good.
So basically it's Gnawback Rhinos, Savage Punches, you get Fall of the Hammer from red, the one or red instant, to trigger your Gnawback Rhinos to fight or deal damage equal to their power, not a fight. And I think the biggest reason to off ramp into it is Goreclan Rampager. That's the 2 red green 4/4 trample that's got Blood Rush for red green to give something +4/+4 in trample. That card's great. You also get to play Goblin Heel Cutter, which is excellent in Gruul Beatdown. You also pick up Heart Piercer Manticore to just like randomly throw your 4/4s or your 5/5s at your opponent's face. Plays Rogue's Passage quite happily. It's very easy to do damage in large chunks quickly and or close out the game after your opponent thinks they've stabilized, thanks to Heart Piercer Manticore and Rogue's Passage.
You're naming a lot of 4-drops. What is existing earlier on the curve?
McKinney Slide Runners, the 2/2 reach, Leaf Crown Dryad, I've come around on a little bit. It's fine. It's not great, but you'll play it as a 2. Really like Voyaging Satyr to ramp you to your 4s. It is 4-drop tribal. Like, I usually have 7 or 8 4-drops in my Gruul Beatdown decks.
Yeah, and some of them sounds like they're modal, like Gore Clan Rampager can be a trick, Heel Cutter can come out on 3. Okay, interesting. And what about Selesnya?
I think it's a similar game plan to Gruul. Another off-ramp from the Gates decks if you start heavy green and Gates is cut. But it's basically just play the Selesnya cards. It's you get Selesnya Charms, you get Loxodon Smiters instead of the Gore Clan Rampagers. But a 3-mana 4/4 is awesome, especially in tandem with Selesnya Charms. Your opponents are just getting beaten down. It's just Selesnya beatdown, like straight Selesnya.
All right, let's chat about spells. So,
all right, let's do it.
The bonus sheet is shifting. You can find on the internet what cards are leaving, what cards are coming in if you care, but we're going to highlight the ones that we think are most important here. So I put 4 cards on this list that I think are the most important ones leaving. I think the chief among them we've already alluded to. Goblin Heel Cutter is out. Thopter Engineer, that's also out. 2 in a red, 1/3 that makes a 1/1 Thopter. And then 2 pieces of interaction with Awaken, Clutch of Currents, the single blue bounce spell, and Ruinous Path, the 1 black, destroy a creature or planeswalker. Those are the 4 cards that jumped out to me, that among the commons or uncommons, that seemed to matter leaving.
I agree. Well, also, all of the planeswalkers leaving is going to make the multicolor soup decks a little bit worse, although those weren't great there because oftentimes you weren't great at protecting them. Mm-hmm. But just the overall power level of the format is going to go down, I think, after this week is worth noting as well.
I agree with that. Yeah, I think that's definitely true.
Of those, Goblin Heel Cutter, I think, is the biggest blow leaving. I mean, it's going to hurt mono red or red white or just red aggro decks losing Heel Cutter.
Because there's nothing coming in, as far as I can tell, that's of that power level replacing it. So I do think red aggressive decks are going to get worse in the next 2 weeks.
You love to see it.
Ben saying, how could they get any worse than they already are?
The next, I think, most important one leaving is Clutch of Currents. Clutch is really good in the, just as a, if you're getting card advantage, you don't mind spending it to stay alive, but also in blue-white, having that to tempo your opponents out. Clutch has been very impressive, and I think Gust of Wind is going to do even more lifting and be an even higher pick with Clutch of Currents rotating out.
Yeah, I buy that for sure. So let's chat about cards that we're excited to see coming in, either as powerful things or potentially just the cards we've got our eyes on. First up is Bile Blight. This is black for an instant. Target creature and all other creatures with the same name as that creature get -3/-3 until end of turn.
It's a fine card. Is there anything specific that it hoses?
In terms of like multiple tokens? No, I don't think so. Just think it's a good removal spell coming in, and I guess potentially has some, I don't even know if it has blowout potential. Maybe does that even make red worse because now the Acroan Crusader tokens get got?
No,
not really.
Next up is Reprisal. 1 and a white for an instant. Destroy target creature with power 4 or greater. It can't be regenerated. Do you think you're going to main deck this card?
I think so. That's like, I mean, I guess it's just worse than Selesnya Charm, like by a lot.
By a lot. And even Selesnya Charm has been awkward at times when I've played with Selesnya Charm as much as I have. Like the only decks this are going to be good against are the green decks. It's not going to be great. I guess like maybe sometimes you go tall enough, but it's really embarrassing against blue white. I don't know that you can main deck this card.
Maybe you don't main deck it. Maybe you're right.
It is really efficient if you hit though.
Yeah.
Like spending 2, usually cards like this cost 4 or whatever. Spending 2 mana to trade with your opponent's 4 power greater thing is pretty big swing.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe I'm always like trying to kill the Gnarlback Rhinos, but maybe Reprisal doesn't get there.
This next card I am psyched about being in the format. This is going to be a game changer, I think. This is blue for a sorcery is Tome Scour. Target player puts the top 5 cards of his or her library into his or her graveyard. It's going to be at uncommon in the format.
Yeah, but like uncommon's the new common, 40's the new 30, you know, like this is just going to end games. Like, I feel like you're thinking about this. You're milling your opponent, right?
Oh, yeah. You're milling your opponent. Like this and some return centaurs, like this is going to embarrass some Gates decks.
Like
absolutely embarrass some Gates decks.
Can I sell you on Phalagi Archaeologist now? Finding Tome Scours?
Finding Tome Scours? I do think, for what it's worth, I do expect Phalagi Archaeologist to get a lot better the next 2 weeks. I anticipate being more excited about Phalagi Archaeologist over the next 2 weeks.
Yeah, I mean,
specifically because of Tome Scour coming in and how I think the format's going to shift. But maybe that's just me like having eyes for Tome Scour.
No, I mean, I'm sort of, and maybe we're both just lost in the sauce a little bit. But I put this on this list and I was like, Ben's going to tell me I'm crazy. But like, I've decked or come close to decking with a lot of different decks in the format. And so unless you're hyper aggro, I just think like Tome Scour twice kind of kills you. Like how many times did you just lose to one activation of Jace Memory Adept
right
in the past 2 weeks? Like
right.
Tome Scour is gonna be big. And there's gonna be some drafts where like multiples are open and you're the only person who wants them. So like it's just going to be we're going to see deck people be like, I got five Tome Scours and I just easy turbo 7-0'd this league or whatever.
Well, but it's going to be so bad against aggro that I don't know that's going to be the case. I view it more as a but very
that's where
powerful.
Archaeologist is at its best, baby.
That is where Archaeologist is at its best, baby. I view it more as a powerful sideboard card. Like you're going to pick them up. They're going to live in the sideboard. And when you face, you know, your blue-black mirror, or you face the Gates mirror or whatever, you're going to. Mm-hmm. Bring those babies in out of the sideboard to win the decking war.
The next card on this list, I think, is a big player, or it's going to, I think, juice up red black is Limits of Solid Areas, 3 and a red for a sorcery. Gain control of target creature until end of turn, untap it. It gains haste until end of turn. It also has cycling for 2 mana. Red black getting an active treason variant, I think, is big.
Yeah, Nantuko Husk will have a purpose in life.
And I think red white can main deck this because it has cycling. Like, you know, your active treason having a sort of fail case is nice.
This is the new Goblin Heel Cutter?
No, because it's not common, so I just don't think it'll come up as often, but I think it's going to be good.
All right, next up on the list, we've got Alive and Well. This is our first Fuse card, so if you've not played with Fuse cards before, you can cast one or both halves of the card from your hand. So on one side, it's Alive, 3 and a green for a sorcery, put a 3/3 centaur creature token onto the battlefield. Well is white for a sorcery that you gain 2 life for each creature you control. So you can cast Alive or Well separately, or if you have 3 green white, you can cast Alive and Well and make your centaur and then gain 2 life for each creature you control.
Yeah, I think the Gates deck getting another way to gain life is big game. That's where I'm thinking about this at its best.
Yeah, you don't have that many creatures on the battlefield laying around frequently, though.
Le briefcase.
Le briefcase. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I don't know. Like, how much life does this need to gain? Like, 5 mana, 3/3, gain 4? You need one other creature? Are you mad about that? That's a good...
I'm not excited about it.
All right. I don't know what decks you're drafting, honestly. Like, I just thought, you're talking about the Gates decks, and I just feel like it... Like, the way you talked about Gates decks last week, when you were like, I'm just never behind when I play Gates decks. Like, I don't know how that's possible. And then you're like, I don't want Alive and Well. Like, what do these decks look like? How are you going tap land, tap land, tap land? And you're like, I'm never behind. I don't need to gain life. Who cares? Like, what are you talking about?
I want Archway Angels to gain life. Like, I want to gain life at chucks of 10 or 12 or 14 or whatever.
Okay. But you don't need to gain life. You're never behind.
I am at that point in the game. I am. But the starts where you go, like, here's the thing.
Yeah.
The starts where you go, and people know this. We don't need to talk about this anymore. But I feel
you're alone.
Need to be
you're alone on an yes. island, and yes. you need to defend yourself.
I am alone, and that's going to be the feedback on this episode. Like mm-hmm. you're just sitting pretty. Like nobody's going to be mad at you. Everybody's going to be like, "Oh, Ben." Like the games where I go, Gruul Guildgate, Wild Slash, Gruul Guildgate, District Guide. Like when I Wild Slash on turn 2 and play a District Guide on turn 3, you can't lose. You can't lose those games. It's impossible. You just can't. I'm serious.
I buy it. I mean, it makes sense.
Anyway, next up on the list, we've got Far and Away.
One and a blue for an instant, return target creature to its owner's hand. Away is two and a black for an instant, target player sacrifices a creature. This is a powerful card.
Yeah, this card and another card on this list that I'm like, is my boomer showing a little bit that I'm like excited about this card? I think this is still good. So we've been down on the edicts these past couple weeks. But I think the fact that this lets you main deck an edict in a powerful way, like this just has play of like, you can save your creature in response to a removal spell and edict your opponent. You can do a thing where you like, they've got two creatures, you bounce the worst one, make them sack the other one. Like this for 5 mana is really good. And then there are just spots where you just want to play far, or you just want to play away, and this gives you that optionality too.
Right. I mean, you're playing this for far and you want access to away.
Wait, what? Really?
I think so. I think I'm more excited about far in this format than I am away. And I like, ideally, I'd like to be blue-black, or I'd want to be blue-white and have, like, you know, a couple Demir Guildgates or whatever to maybe Mize away. And it's going to be at its best, certainly, in straight blue-black.
Yeah. Well, that's a thing to shout out about the Fuse cards in general, is that I think it will start to, maybe the gates will get a little scarcer because there's now more reason to be like, well, I'm playing far in my blue-white deck, but, like, it'd be nice to be able to have access to away, so let's grab some Demir Orzhov Guildgates. Next on this list, I only have eyes for one half, but it's Armed and Dangerous. Armed is one and a red for a sorcery. Target creature gets +1/+1 and gains double strike until end of turn. Dangerous is 3 and a green for a sorcery. All creatures able to block target creature this turn do so.
Which side do you have eyes for?
I have eyes for Armed, personally. I think Armed is big game for red aggressive decks. I mean, Dangerous on Gnarlback Rhino is also pretty good, I guess, but that's 4 mana into 4 mana.
Yeah, but Armed being a sorcery hurts it a lot, right?
I don't know. Yeah, like, your blowout potential isn't that big, but, like, Armed on your Annex and Simede, Armed on your, like, your get a heroic trigger.
It's got trample, sure, yeah.
Certainly trample.
It's like, going to be really good in red-green with all the trample stuff running around.
Correct.
I
think this card's powerful.
Yeah, actually, I really like it in red-green with all the trample stuff running around.
Yeah.
I'm into that. I added Turn and Burn. Is this the other one where you were worried your boomer's showing?
I was
going to. You didn't even have it on the list.
That's right. I was going to put it on the list, and then I was like, maybe this isn't as good, but maybe it's just like far away. So Turn Burn. Turn is 2 and a blue. Instant, target creature loses all abilities, becomes a 0/1 until end of turn. Burn is 1 and a red. Instant, deal 2 to target creature or player. And then obviously can be fused together. Is this good enough? Blue-red is certainly not good enough, I don't think. Like, is blue-red going to get there this week now that their spells matter?
I don't think so. There's not that many good spells coming in.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, the fuse cards are, there's a lot to like about them. That's why I left it off the list. That's why I left it off the list. I'm not sure if it holds water.
It's got to be fine in blue-red, if you're blue-red.
I mean, the dream of this card, there's just so much setup. The dream of this is, I'm in combat, I shrink your thing, I kill that because it's an 0-1, and I use burn to pick off another thing. That is so much setup for what we in the biz like to call a 2-for-1. And those are not hard to come by.
This is also going to be excellent in gates. Like, you're going to be happy to play burn early, and then when you do stabilize and get the turn burn blowout, like, it's going to be good there.
Yeah, I could see it in gates for sure. The optionality is nice. I don't know. It's the card I'm the least amped about. Like, I like far and away quite a bit more than turn and burn.
But if you even look at the rares that are coming in, like, there are some banger rares. But certainly less banger rares than there were on the Planeswalker sheet.
For sure. Yeah. Yeah. So you just think that, yeah, the power level is going to go well. If power level is going down,
the synergy decks are going to go up.
Going up.
I agree. But the overarching issue is that, I mean, I hate to sound like a broken record here, but the most powerful cards in the format are Gatebreaker Ram, Gates Ablaze.
Yep.
Like, those are the best things to do, and cycling through those with a Possessed Scob, whatever.
Yeah, and I think
those are still going to be there, and they're uncommon.
They're going to be there, and they're going to be better this week, I think.
Maybe if the red decks, if the red aggro decks get worse. But I do also think, I mean, you've already seen it. Like, you've seen the evolution happening. Like, and especially in best of three, I don't know what's going on in best of one. I did a brief stint in best of one for a while, but in best of three, Gates has been contested, and I've not been able to do it much. And I think that's what's interesting to me about the format. I like drafting
trying to get into it and then figuring out what I'm supposed to do when I can't get into it. Mm-hmm.
So the biggest losers, we've shouted it out. I think Red Aggro is the biggest loser with Heel Cutter leaving. We talked about this a little bit before. I think Dreadbore also is a big loser. Like the fact
Dreadbore gets a lot worse. I mean, not a lot worse. It's still going to be a fine removal spell, but it is less unique.
Less unique and less of a pull into Black Red. I think less important to Black Red. Like you did need outs. Black Red just has removal. Like, you've got Obnixilus's Cruelty. You've got Wild Slash. Like, you're gonna be able to kill stuff. And Dreadbore, yeah, it's cheap, but it's a sorcery. And I don't know. It's just, I think it's less important. The big winners, I do think Red Black getting Active Treason is big. I think Planeswalkers leaving makes Gates better. And I think Alive and Well.
Sure.
I think Alive and Well is another life gain card, makes Gates better. And maybe just all fuse cards in general, just as like, here's multicolored cards that I can randomly cast both halves of, like the powerful ones. Maybe that makes the Gates deck better. And red heroic decks getting armed, and maybe just red green getting armed and dangerous. Anything else that jumped out to you?
Weirdly, I don't think blue's gaining a lot, but I like blue's spot in the format a little bit better with red getting worse. Because I do think the blue decks match up well. That's my least favorite matchup to play when I'm playing Gates, is playing against a blue control deck.
Because you're sort of doing like, here's a card that matters.
Yeah, right. And
if they
have the counter spell, and it's not Essence Scatter, it's the three mana counters that counter anything that are tough to play against from the blue decks. And Essence Scatter getting your Gatebreaker Ram or whatever, like it's problematic. And I think if red's worse, I do like blue's theoretically. Blue spot in the format better, despite it not gaining much as far as individual cards here.
Well, then perhaps we should have shouted out a card that is coming in for blue, which is a common. It's getting a cancel that exiles. It's a devoid cancel that exiles.
I almost put that on the list. Yeah,
that might be a big winner and an important card as well. I could see that.
Yeah. So I think that's the other thing that I see happening this week, potentially.
Mm-hmm. Is blue getting better? Okay.
Blue getting better, and specifically blue-black.
Do you think, the people want to know, do you think Phalagi Archaeologist could find its way into your heart again this coming fortnight?
I do. I think now that Planeswalkers are gone, I think Control's got a chance to shine. I think that's going to be the biggest shift for the format. Like, not individual cards. I think Planeswalkers going away, because Control, like, that was what was so frustrating the first week because I was in on Control. I was in on Phalagi Archaeologist.
But what if it's not Control? That's what I'm trying to say, is like, what if it's not pure Control? What if Phalagi Archaeologist doesn't belong in pure Control or can shine in not pure Control?
I don't buy it. I don't buy Basilica's Creature in my blue-black deck. I do want to play like blue-black or Grixis Control the way I was envisioning in my head the first 2 weeks. And I think with not having to account for Planeswalkers, it probably is possible to account for aggro and Gates. Like, I think Control can handle that. Like, as long as you don't also have to play to the board and be able to kill a Planeswalker.
Yeah.
Because, like, trying to account for playing to the board to be able to pressure a Planeswalker and beat Control and beat Gates Ablaze, like, that was all a lot. But I can definitely see, that is my plan going into these 2 weeks, is I want to experiment with blue control and blue-black control again, now that Planeswalkers are out of the format.
Okay. Yeah.
So all of our conversation was for nothing.
That's how it is every week. We resolve and rinse repeat next week.
All right. Anything else before we go?
No, I still don't like this format very much. I think I will probably be taking a bit of, I'm curious to see how the spell stuff shakes out, but I'll probably be mostly playing Vintage Cube over the holiday break. If I'm playing some Magic,
love to see it.
And then I'll dial back in to Pioneer Masters and prep
for the Arena Open week.
The Arena Open.
Is the Arena Open during Devotion?
Yeah, it'll be, because it's on the 11th and 12th. So yeah, it'll be Devotion week. So Spells week doesn't even matter.
I do have one last thing I want to throw out into the world before we wrap up the episode here. For everybody who is getting ready to pile on me in recent episode discussions and whatever about Red, I do see that it's good. Like, just from how I'm valuing the cards in the format, it's very difficult for me to get into the deck. And I think I would personally be giving up equity trying to get into red and or be grumpy about doing it. I like how I'm drafting the format and I'm comfortable with it. And I think people who are drafting red and are enjoying drafting red and winning with red, like, don't let me yuck your yum. And I would just also like to have my yum as well.
I need, maybe I'll make it, or someone out there who's better at graphic design can make it. I need to do like a meme template of the, like, I need a bunch of like red cards or a bunch of 17 lands data. And then just Ben being like, not drafting like that, but happy for you, or sorry that that happened. Like, that's how Ben is. He's like, I'm happy for you drafting on your red journey. Seems great. Not for me, but.
All right. And on that note, let us wrap it up. Thank you, as always, to Salty Pretzels for our intro and outro music. Make sure you give it a listen.
You can find all our content on our website, lordsoflimited.com, our episode backlogs, our tier list, our merch courtesy of TeePublic, our Patreon page, our Twitch streams, respectively, our YouTube channel. All that's on lordsoflimited.com.
If you've got any feedback about the show or any questions, shoot us an email at lordsoflimited@gmail.com.
Thanks so much for listening. Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, and we will catch you next week for another episode of Lords of Limited.
Thanks, everybody. See you later. That's going to make more people mad at me. Got that. I don't know. I can say without sounding like a defensive turd.
You're just in this impossible position.
I am in a very losing position. It's very frustrating. And you leaving me on the island this week. That's why I'm so mad at you. Because I knew when I came into your stream and saw you playing red that this was going to happen. I knew. I think that's why. All right, let me try again. And you can put that on the outtakes.
Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime is so delicious, so unbelievable, no word exists to describe it. It's better than mind-blowing, it's mouth-blowing. Bright, citrusy, and spicy, this newest flavor from Captain Morgan is a balanced blend of sweetness with delicious notes of lime and slightly spicy chili flavor that is great for an escape outdoors with your crew or your next hangout. Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime is best enjoyed as an ice-cold shot or as a chili lime twist on a classic as a spicy daiquiri. Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime, a touch of sweet, a kick of heat. Please drink responsibly. Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime, premium Caribbean rum with natural flavors, 35% alcohol by volume, Captain Morgan Rum Co., New York, New York.